Well, once we got through all our readings today, they're so good. And by good, I mean unsettling and confusing and scary, honestly. They're so good that we should be talking about all of them today, but we're not going to do that. We don't have time to do that today. So, as I mentioned earlier, our second lesson from Thessalonians, my plan is to pick that up next week with the one that comes up next week that is a continuation of it. Because that's a really fun one. And our gospel lesson today, it definitely deserves talking about, but I'm not going to do it. Instead, we're going to try to talk about our first reading from Amos is the plan for this sermon today. But first, I need to tell you a little bit about my week. So as some of you had heard, I wound up doing 9 days of individual sort of isolated quarantine on my own to make sure I hadn't gotten the virus. And so my wife and kids were over at my in-laws' house. Thank you, Dennis and Michelle, for graciously taking in your daughter and grandchildren on a few hours' notice for 9 days. It was Monday evening that I got the news that the second test result was negative, so I didn't have to go, yay! So I was got a reprieve, and my wife and kids came home, and we lived happily ever after for about 14 hours until Tuesday morning when we found that my 3-year-old son Stellan had been exposed on Monday to a confirmed case of COVID. And so he needs to strictly quarantine for 14 days. If you've ever tried to quarantine a 3-year-old, you can or even imagine a 3-year-old. You don't even have to have met one. You just know that that's not going to work very well. And so we decided that the whole family is basically going to stay home for quite a while. And so Dennis and Michelle went from having way too much daughter and grandkids time to none at all. And so we'll see if we go the full 2 weeks or how that goes with that. I had a good 14 hours there where I was not in quarantine one way or the other. But now, and again, the rules are the rest of the family doesn't have to be in quarantine because he's a 3-year-old. He just goes around trying to lick people all the time. We're all going to stay home and try to keep everybody else safe as long as possible. Like, that's the plan. And that was just sort of in my life and in my family. And of course, that was Tuesday morning. And if you remember, Tuesday, I guess there was this election too. You may have heard about it. I mean, most of us voted before the actual day, so probably we just skipped it. But it ended up being kind of a long thing. As far as by my calculation, Tuesday lasted approximately 80 hours, as far as I could tell. So that was a whole thing. I mean, my week, going from the one quarantine by myself into the other quarantine with the whole family, it did feel quite a bit like fleeing from a lion and being met by a bear. And it felt like being at home and thinking I was safe and then getting bitten by a snake. There was a lot of that. And that was, again, before Tuesday morning, or before the election stuff came into it. So, it was a rough week, and you're all in my prayers for that. Now, in honor of Amos and the very stark reading that we have from Amos today, I'm going to give you a brief public service announcement about this pandemic, which is to stay home. All right? For church, we've been talking about doing Christmas Eve and trying to do something in person with like small groups or families walking through and being in the space there. I don't think that's going to work. I think we got to call that off. This virus. I wish we didn't have to. I would love to do that. I think it would be a really powerful and meaningful and wonderful thing. But this virus is getting worse literally every day. Certainly, every week is the worst week so far of this virus, and there's no indication that's going to slow down before Christmas. So the safe thing to do is to not do that. I don't think things like getting together with family for Thanksgiving or Christmas, those things aren't going to happen. Certainly not for my family. I think the plan, for us, and I hope that you're able to make a similar plan, is to create a bubble or a pod or whatever that is sustainable for you, that works, that's a small number of people. It's us and our in-laws 2 blocks away, and it's wonderful, and we want to be able to keep that going. So maybe Stellan won't go back to preschool after the 2 weeks when he's allowed to go back, because maybe we don't want to go through this again. We have to decide those things. If I lived alone, I just lived alone for 9 days, that wouldn't work for me. I couldn't just do that for months at a time. I'd go bonkers. So I would need to find somebody that I could sort of be around and be safe with. So find a way to create some sort of bubble, some sort of pod, some sort of little thing that can keep you safe and sane, and then stick to it. Don't make exceptions for Thanksgiving Day. People are going to get sick. People are going to die. Maybe not in your family, but if it's not in your family, honestly, that's probably because you're white. Our sisters and brothers and siblings of color have not had that experience. We know Pastor William lost family members to this virus. Just found out last week that Pastor Rodolfo, who's the pastor of Ebenezer Elim Church that meets in our place on Sunday afternoons, he lost his wife, or not his wife, no, his sister and his mother to COVID-19 in Guatemala. His other sister in this country also got the disease, but she recovered and then was able to go to Guatemala and try to care for her mother as she then died. So, this disease thing, it's really serious. And I think we're still in the early days of the impact of this pandemic, this disease. I talked to somebody randomly in Australia who was like, this isn't a pandemic. Not enough people are dead. And I was like, that's because we're at the beginning, you jerk. Also, just shut it if you're going to be rude, Australian guy. And that's just, I mean, people dying, but we don't know the long-term effects of this disease. We don't know how it's going to affect people's immune systems for the long term. We don't know how it affects children really yet. Quarantining in my family is because our three-year-old was exposed at school. My brother, the same thing happened to him just a couple of days ago, where his 4 or 5-year-old daughter was exposed at her preschool, and now they're staying home. Another friend of mine in Illinois, the same thing happened to them, and then their 3-year-old was diagnosed positive with the disease after it happened. So this is a real thing, and we need to take it seriously. So, okay, that's enough of that. That was, again, in the style of Amos. I'm not trying to just yell at you, but I'm trying to impress upon you the importance and the seriousness of these things. And I know all of you know this stuff. I know you do, but I gotta say it. It's important. I think it would be irresponsible of me having a public voice and not saying these things at this point. So getting back to actual Amos, the hits just keep coming. I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies, Amos says. For a very long time, I have been sure that these words of Amos, these critical words of Amos, have been directed at me, among many others, not just at me, but certainly at me. And I know this because I went to the Institute of Sacred Music at Yale, and I studied liturgy, and I love worship and music and all those things, and I love the feelings that it gives you, and I love rich and powerful and authentic worship things and great church music, and I love all that stuff, and it's so important to me. And Amos is saying, shut it. That stuff is not ultimately what's important. That stuff is not going to save you. That stuff is not in itself going to strengthen your relationship with God or with one another. And so I've always heard these words from Amos and like, because I know it's at me. If I'm preaching harshly about Amos, I know that I'm preaching at myself as much as anyone else. He goes on, right? Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps. Amos, in this lesson today and really throughout his whole book, he was not preaching to the bad people. He was not preaching to the sinners, to the obvious, the outcasts of society. Amos was preaching to the choir, pretty literally, I think. And that's been me for a long time. And that's most of us here. Amos was preaching to a people who had figured out how to follow the letter of the law to achieve prosperity for themselves, but they had done so by exploiting others, by taking advantage of other people. Not everybody had the good, strong lives that they had. And again, these were the people who, you know, they had enough money, they were comfortable, they could go to, you know, they worshipped properly, they followed all the laws, they could wear their best church clothes. But the only way they were able to do that is that other people in their society and around their society were suffering. Now, Amos did this. This was just before the Assyrian Empire came and conquered the northern kingdom of Israel. That was the historical moment for this. So that happened, and then it was, you know, 100 and some years later that the Babylonians came and conquered the southern kingdom of Judah. But so this was Amos talking to the people of Israel, again, the northern kingdom, and they were about to be overrun by the Assyrians. And so he said, listen, you all think you've got this figured out. You think God has your back. You think God is going to protect you from everything that's going wrong because you do, you know, you worship the right way and you live comfortable lives and you know, you obey and you're righteous people individually, but your personal piety will not save you. And your gatherings about church will not save you because you're failing to follow the whole of the law, the part where you have to care for the widow and the orphan, for the alien that lives among you. They're letting wealth inequality, honestly, start to define their society. And you know, the Bible has even has a cure for that. They're supposed to do a jubilee every 50 years and reset everything, and everybody gets their family's ancestral lands back, and every debt is canceled, and everybody gets to start fresh from where they are. If you already have money, you get to keep the money you have. But for those who have nothing, they get their land back, they get their debt canceled, they get another shot. That was the plan for the jubilee in the Bible. They hadn't done that for a really long time, because who would honestly ever do that? How could a society do that? Because when people have, you know, earned what they've got, they want to keep it. They're not going to give it back. They're going to give their land back. They're not going to cancel the debt that somebody owes them. Why would anybody do that? If you had the stuff, you're going to keep the stuff. And so wealth inequality came to define their society. And Amos said that was the reason that they were destroyed by the Assyrians. Now, this was a nation marked by extravagance for some people, while others suffered and struggled to scrape together a life, which sounds pretty familiar to me in terms of our society today. It's easy to see the parallels to how we live now, how I've lived at least in this society my whole life. And for me, as, you know, a straight white male pastor who grew up with enough money to be comfortable, it's easy to recognize myself in the people that Amos is condemning. It's easy to see that I'm the bad guys in this story. I mean, I'm literally the one who gets to plan the festival celebrations and lead the solemn assemblies, right? Like, I know that Amos is talking at me, that Amos is coming for me. And I think that applies to everybody. You know, we're the, you know, faithful church people. Y'all are on this call. You're faithful church people. You've been doing this your whole lives. And Amos is saying, that's not going to save you. That's not going to help. In fact, sometimes that's what keeps us from doing the things that God needs us to do. Because we think, oh, my religious life is about my going to worship and my praying and my personally being good and being a good person and not sinning or whatever. Like, oh, I'm not a sinner. I don't do, like, I don't know, whatever sin things that come. I'm not going to make a list. But the point is, it's easy to say, oh, those things aren't me, so I'm the good guy. So I'm, you know, everything's good for me. But that's not, Amos says, how it works. I'm gonna go back a little bit. I'll come back to this in a second, because I want to go back to the earlier part of our reading from Amos 2. When he says, alas for you who desire the day of the Lord. Why do you want the day of the Lord? The people of Israel in Amos' time thought that the day of the Lord was going to be the day when God came and smote God's enemies, smote Israel's enemies, and set up Israel as the kingdom under which the whole world would worship God. I mean, those were some of the promises that, you know, Abraham's descendants would be as numerous as the stars, and they knew what God had done, and they thought that the day of the Lord was going to be the day that God punished God's enemies. They didn't realize that they too counted as God's enemies, even as God's special chosen people. They'd fallen away from the whole of God's law, from loving and serving God and their neighbor. They weren't doing it the way they were supposed to anymore. So they thought the day of the Lord was going to be good for them. That the day of the Lord was going to make everything right, that everything that they'd been getting away with would suddenly be validated for all time. That the little they'd been doing for one another and for the neighbors was going to be enough. That's what they thought. Honestly, it makes me think of people, and honestly a little bit people like me, who thought that this past Tuesday might be the day that everything got all better. Or maybe they think that January 20th, when there's a new president, is the day that everything is going to be all better. We don't have to worry anymore. We don't have to work anymore. It's not. We cannot count on one day to save us, or something that happens around us to save us. We can't count on other people to do God's work for us. See, a relationship with God at its best is to see what God has done for us and to be grateful and then to participate in God's activity in the world of loving God, loving our neighbor, and serving God and serving our neighbor. And what would that look like? What would God have us do if we could participate in God's work? Amos, this is such famous and powerful words. But let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. And there's so many, we'll sing a song or two about this yet today. And we'll talk more about this. Justice rolling down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. I'll quote Charles L. Aaron Jr. is a thing I read about this. It says, the concepts of justice and righteousness go together. Justice refers to fairness, attention to the needs of the poor, an end to oppression, a legal system that protects the rights of all people. Righteousness connotes healthy relationships, a sense of commonality, a recognition of God as the one who has formed the people into a community, a respect for the bonds among the people. Now, the definitions of justice and righteousness are always a little bit fuzzy and a little bit arbitrary, and it's never quite clear exactly what that is. And any time that I think or that we think that we're on the side of justice and righteousness, that we know what it is, we know what it looks like, we know how to do it, that's when Amos's words come back for us again, that probably we've started to do something that God doesn't want us to do. We can't be sure that we're participating in God's work. We can't be sure that we're doing it right. And yet, our faith demands that we try. That we try to participate in God's work, that we read the scriptures, that we study faithfully, that we communicate with those in the church and with those different from us to see what justice really looks like in real people's lives, to see what righteousness looks like. It's not just individual personal piety, but as Charles Aaron suggests, it's about the relationship that we have with each other. It's about building into a community and respecting one another. That's part of what righteousness is. Those are the things, those are the ways that we are to act in following God. And finally, we'll get to some good news, because this has all just been law, 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 law. We've got to get some good news for this. The good news is that we can't do it. The good news is that if we try to create justice and righteousness in the world, that we will fail. And that God, the good news part of that, of course, is that God knows that we will fail, that we can't do this on our own. And so God sent Jesus to live and die and rise again so that our sins would be forgiven, so that our failures would be swallowed up, so that the power of sin and death would no longer hold sway, ultimately, in our lives. God has set us free from the power of sin and death in Jesus, so that our salvation does not depend on doing these things. And once we know we're free from that, we have to, that our very lives, our eternal souls, or whatever, don't depend on this because of what God has already done for us in Jesus, then we are free to try these things without the pressure of do it or else. The or else is taken from us. So we can try this. We can do these things. Now, once we know what God has done for us, we can't be like the people that Amos was preaching against who got comfortable, who thought that God had already handled everything and there was nothing more to worry about. We can't get complacent just because of an election or just because our own lives are good or our bank accounts are strong or whatever. That's not a reason to get complacent. We always, the whole thing of following Jesus in this world is constantly seeking God's justice and righteousness, constantly seeking good for our neighbor, constantly wearing masks in public these days and staying home as much as possible and listening to the best of the science, which is always changing. We know that with this pandemic, but we can listen and do our best. And then the next day, the science might change and we might have to do something else. Remember when masks were no good and now masks are the whole thing? All we can do is the best we can do. We will make mistakes, but our salvation does not depend on this. Our salvation does not depend on us getting it right, but the lives of our neighbors and the quality of life of our neighbors may well depend on what we do, what we choose to do, and what we choose not to do. So let us follow Jesus. Jesus, let us do these things. Let us hear Amos's words that are harsh toward us and accept those things. Rather than getting defensive or scared or cowering, let us accept that our imperfections, repent, ask for forgiveness, recognize that God has forgiven us, and go out and try again. That's what the lesson is. Amen. Okay. Okay. So now we can, I can share my screen again and we can sing another song. So give me just a second for that. So this song is number 710 in our book, 710. That's what we're going to go with. This one's a little small on the screen. You may want to use your hymnal, but I think you'll be okay on most screens for this one.